Hey, sports dads, are you ready for the best combination of fatherhood and football talk? Well, let's go.
It's that time to have a conversation about fatherhood and football and the nation. Ready, set, hut, grab your kids and huddle up. We might get deep, but just run it up the gut. So put your jersey on and clap for the home team. It's the dad's thing, yeah, you know what I mean. So tell a friend to tune in if you heard me to the best show in town every Thursday. Fatherhood and football, it's a dad's thing. Fatherhood and football, it's a dad's thing. Fatherhood and football, it's a dad's thing.
Welcome to a Dad's Thing podcast, Fatherhood and Football. I am James Simmons, your in-studio host dad of two amazing daughters. I'm a former middle school, high school, and college football coach, as well as a former wide receiver at D1AA Fordham University in the Bronx. Today we are joined by Kevin Frattora. Kevin and I both played wide receiver at Fordham University during the 94 to 96 seasons. Kevin played a huge role in my development as a young player coming onto the college game. Kevin has stayed close to the game of football since leaving college and grad school. Today, Kevin and his wife are raising a son and daughter, very athletically gifted. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me, man.
It's been a long time, bro. And we've reconnected recently, a lot because of the show. It's good to see you, man. How's everything been?
It's good, and it's always too long, and that's the problem with today's society, right?
Yeah,
we all move all over the place. We didn't stick close to home, you know, afterwards, and so friendships, you know, you lose track of where everybody is, and you know, but when you get back into them, the true friendships that you had, you can jump right back in as just you saw him yesterday. So it's awesome to be a part of this and to see you.
Thank you. And I didn't do any favors to the friendship and relationship by moving away to the West Coast. And, you know, I've really been thinking about that a lot as I've been reconnecting with guys. I'm like, man, I'm out here on the island. And when I get connected with you guys and hear the stories about, you know, how you are still in contact with some of our guys, it's like, man, I miss that. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's never too late to reconnect and to just go down memory lane about some of the things we did in the past, and definitely talk about the great and good things that are being that's happening. I always, you know, give the guest an opportunity to share a little bit about how our paths crossed through this lovely game of football.
Sure. So, so I was there, I'm a year ahead of you, right?
Yep.
We don't like to remind each other that I'm a year older than you. So we'll just stick that we're the same age. So I was a year ahead of you. You came in and actually came in with a great group of wide receivers. I was quickly the underdog, if you will, from a skill standpoint. You know, the way we were set up and me coming from Ohio, that's the funny thing that, you know, for me, it was such a transition. I'd never been in New York in my life. And so to come to New York and with the group that I came with, I still remember my roommate who was from Long Island. And his first comment to me when he saw me was, so you're from Idaho. How's Idaho? Like, what do you do in Idaho? And I looked at him. I was like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm from Ohio.
Yeah.
Like, where's that? And I'm like, I, and God love him, Rob Wolf. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I'm like, okay, it's only a couple states over, not that far away. You know, but it's a whole different world in New York. So what I saw in my transition from Ohio to New York was, regardless of all the different areas people were coming from, the common thing was football.
Yes.
Right. We all had a love for football. So that when your class came in, depending on regardless of where people came from, we had Pennsylvania, we had Florida, we had, you know, Jersey, of course, New York, et cetera. It still had that common theme. So when you guys came into the room, you know, you, Larry Skoblik, and I'm trying to remember
Todd.
Yeah. And then there was another guy from Long Island, right? That only lasted the first year.
That's
I forget
right.
his name.
That's right.
Yep. And he came in all state, all everything, right? But when we all got there, we kind of get to a point where you check all that at the door. Anything that you had accomplished, right? Regardless of who we were, you know, we had one goal. So it's kind of welcoming somebody new into the family, but they're not a baby, right? And so you're quickly, you know, it's almost like having a brother-in-law pop in. You got to love them right away because, you know, one, they ain't going anywhere.
And I appreciate that from you because, you know, we were joking a little bit, you know, folks can't see you, but you're
6'3".
You're 6'3", you know, you weighed 200 pounds and I'm 5'5", and I weighed 140 pounds. And, you know, the movie that I watched the day before I reported to camp was The Program. And I said to myself, James, what are you getting yourself into? Mm-hmm. You know, and I really, as we talk about that transition and all sure. that, it was tough, you know,
yeah.
But you guys welcomed me and the rest of the guys in, and it was nothing. We all had a skill set, and we'll talk a little bit about the skill sets as we go along. But yeah, no, that I remember that greatly.
Oh yeah. And your class, you know, so while I was 6'3", the majority of you guys that came in were the shorter skill guys. Slot receiver types. And, you know, you had Larry from Philly, Dave from Pennsylvania, and if I'm remembering correctly, Long Island.
Long Island, right? Me, and Todd was from Massachusetts, I believe.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So from that side of it, you know, you have different, you know, walks of life. And it's funny you mentioned The Program because, you know, that came out, I think, a year earlier, if I remember correctly.
93.
Yeah. So right when I was there, and I remember watching it before our home opener as I'm a freshman. And I remember Joe Moorhead coming into the huddle, and he made a comment like what the guy said when he came into the huddle from The Program, you know, leave the women and children at home. Let's go hunt. Right. And I just remember, man, that was corny. I just watched that in the movie. Why are you saying that? You know, as you're jogging out to the play. But, you know, it's again, no matter where we all came from,
right.
and coming into the mix, while you knew, hey, these guys are here to eventually take your job. Mm. Right. They're here to replace you. They want to play. I want to play. Everybody wants to play. There's two ways to handle that. You got certain people that, you know, we'll keep people at arm's length, or you have people, and we had a room full of them. And that's kind of where our paths crossed, where I was like, look, I'm going to teach them everything I know. And I'm going to love them because I'm spending the next 3-4 years with these guys. And we have a common goal. We want to win games, want to play well. And so, and I, you know me being lighthearted, right. And liking to have fun, and work hard. You know, you guys, you know, and you and Larry were the guys that I actually became closer with out of the group. And part of it was because, look, these are slot guys.
Yeah.
They ain't taking my position outside. and I just enjoyed, yeah. You know, I enjoyed the honest conversations and the fun with it. So, and then, you know, we'll talk later about it, I'm sure, is at the time you don't understand how that person's really impacting you until later in life. Right. And so, you and I were laughing earlier. And I told you, the other day I was back in Ohio with my folks for Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I opened up this armoire because, you know, all our parents have all our stuff in boxes, et cetera. Right. And I opened up this armoire and I saw there was this photo thing, which was a collage of photos.
Yeah.
Probably 10 photos. I'll say 10 total photos. And there's a picture of you taken by my parents. Just you, it's not me and you. And you got your helmet on and you're about to strap up outside of our locker room. And what's funny is there's two people in those pictures besides me. There's one of you and there's one of Sean McGowan, who, you know, I'm really close with.
Yep.
And it just, it's funny to me because, you know, you and I literally just reconnected a couple weeks ago, right? And then I'm in Ohio and I'm just, you know, looking around and you're in the picture. So it was, you know, it's just, you know, you come back to God's plan, everything's connected, everything happens for a reason. Now, sometimes we don't understand that till later in life, but there is a reason why I chose to go to Fordham. There's a reason why you chose to go to Fordham. And, you know, at those moments, we may not have understood or embraced that later in life, because life comes at you in all different ways, that you can reconnect with people and almost be a throwback to when it was, but it's a throwback with a different
little twist.
Spin to
it. Yeah, definitely.
Right. There's a love for not only each other, but now a love for where each of us are in our lives, and even more so as who we've become, right? We're done, you know, when you're in college and you're doing stuff, and when you got new guys coming in, you know, you want to stick your chest out and you want to be, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. And it's about me. But then you break out, and then at some point in your life, you have a humbling moment and you realize, hey, this isn't about me.
Yeah.
Right. And you come to a reality. And so when you do reconnect with your friends, you remember the fun and the laughter. But then you're like, man, mm-hmm. I'm so happy that we crossed paths back then so that we could cross paths now.
Right. Right.
Right. Because we can help each other so much more now, more so than we ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
We actually know life a little bit better.
Yeah. And it was at levels, right? Because, you know, big white dude coming in, hugging and goofing around, little black guy, you know, from the city. And, you know, you mentioned your family. And, you know, as we were leaving the conversation a couple of days ago, you know, before you even mentioned that, please send my love to your family, you know, because they showed so much love to me those days. And then you shared that story about the picture, and you know, it's just like, yeah, those connections you make, you know, it makes you better moving forward in the future. So
and it breaks the, like football, right? It breaks the color barrier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was in the 90s, right? We know what we were coming out of in the 80s, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you know, the struggles and you know, the conflict, you know, with, you know, I always say with the emergence of real music. So I call that rap music, right? Of telling the real stories of what's going on in certain areas. And I love the music, but I didn't grow up that way. Right.
Right.
But it was always that football will break down any barrier, even today, like with what I do now, but it will always take down that barrier, whether it's gender, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's religious beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, there's a common goal in there. And when you step into a huddle, or into a locker room, everybody was represented.
Definitely. Definitely. So, the game is very powerful. And a couple of weeks ago, I really talked about, you know, the integrity of the game. It's something mm-hmm. that is worth protecting, especially if you've suited up or if you put a whistle around your neck or a fan, you know, because the game has brought so many people together on many fronts. So, and I remember, you know, I see your logo there, New York Giants. I remember many years ago, and I played this song with Dave on the show, Whitney Houston singing mm-hmm. the national anthem. At the Super Bowl, the Giants won. And it's incredible. You know, it's a very thing that can unite us. And we need that more than anything nowadays.
Best anthem ever from a singer, songwriter, legend, right? And unfortunately passed away.
Yeah.
We all remember moments in our lives, right? That's a moment. That's crazy, right? We all, if, you know, one way or another, we heard the song because it was played the next day on the radio. Right.
Number one on the charts.
Yeah. And so you sit there and you're like, the national anthem was sung by somebody and she killed it.
Yeah.
And we remember it. So there's moments of life that you remember, and it's wild. That's one of the ones that we remember.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do that aren't even sports fans, but it happened in a sports moment, which is great.
Definitely. You know, I wanted to touch on some of our Fordham days because I do want to go a little bit back. One of the things I don't know much about your football story is how it started. You know what I mean? Sure. So I'd love to get into that in a second. But, you know, are there any specific or particular moments during our playing days that just sticks out to you? You know, Cal and Dave, we talked about, you know, Tricario.
I mean, there's a lot. If you remember, I loved practice. I loved the games, but I loved practice. And so, you know, there's a lot of those guys you just mentioned that hated practice, right? Larry hated practice. And of course, guys on Cal didn't like practice either. You know, but he was always smiling for it. And, you know, it's funny. You had certain coaches, and we all had a couple, right? You know, you had the Tricario. You know, I had another, Ulrich, was a coach, and then Patton, right. Yep. Was a coach as well. And Dave and I are still good friends to this day. I just remember no matter what came out of their mouths, we were all good.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were all like, you can say whatever you want to say, but five of us, six of us, seven of us, eight of us, we're all good. right? We were, it's kind of like, okay, we're the kids, but we're best friends. You can dog on James, you can dog on me, you can dog on Cal, but as soon as, you know, we get back in our team huddle and they weren't in our huddle at that point, we're like, we got this. And it didn't matter who it was. And that's the funny thing about it was, you know, so I got thrown in to the mix my freshman year. It probably three games in. I think it was Cornell. It was Cornell. James, I didn't know what I was doing. And if you remember, you know, we still had to run like scout as a freshman. You had to run some scout team stuff, especially right in the beginning.
Right.
And so I had missed when I got to camp, I'll start there, freshman year. 95 degrees, hot as heck. And we're out on the field and they're doing this drill where you basically, one guy gets on all fours and you jump over them back and forth, right? And until they like maybe 15, 20 seconds, then they hit the whistle and the guy that was jumping now gets down on the ground and then they're jumping over you. I almost passed out and I'm like sitting there woozy. I go over to the side. I'm like, you know, I don't feel good. They're putting ice on me, all that kind of stuff. So immediately I'm weak, right? That's the, kind of the thought process. So later that day, I go into the training room and Vinny's like, hey, you know, let's check you out. And I open up my mouth and he's like, dude, he goes, I think you got strep throat. But it was just red, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So they get me tested. I got strep throat.
Wow.
We go to camp
yeah.
up in Trinity Pollock. I'm not practicing. I'm standing under a shade tree, right? And you know what coaches are thinking. This kid's weak. You know, you ever going to practice? You know, that kind of stuff. So when I finally got better, because I was just sick of hearing it. So I wasn't even better yet. So I went out, and the first practice, I catch a route over the middle. And we're just in uppers. And there's two safeties. One of them comes up to kind of senior, kind of just give me a little business. Mm-hmm. And I trucked him and stood over him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And threw the ball at him. And next thing you know, it was like, whoosh, you know, guys. And it was doing freshmen, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, coaches loved it. Right.
Yep.
Seniors didn't like it at all.
Definitely.
Right. And so, you know, you go through scout team and you go through some of that kind of stuff and, you know, you're having that conversation and you're looking at how everything's going and you think you're learning, but you're not learning the playbook, the plays, right? Cause you're doing other stuff. And what was crazy was they finally saw me doing some things on scout team. More so, they put me on defense on scout team, like as a free safety. And I'm running around, you know, swatting stuff, you know, and picking stuff off. Partly because we knew what the play was, right? So they finally put me, they're like, hey, we need to get this kid on the field. So they put me in the Cornell game because somebody tweaked their ankle. It might have been Cal. He wasn't hurt, like as he got hurt later in his career with when he broke it, but something happened. So he wasn't playing. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the routes I was supposed to be running. I didn't know anything. And if you know me,
yeah.
right? From my sophomore year, when you came in,
yep.
if anybody knew the offense,
yeah.
it was me. I knew every position after that, right? You remember as a senior, I got in a 3-point stance as a tight end, right? Because someone got hurt.
Yep.
So it's one of those things where I didn't know what I was doing, but I went full speed and we were getting our butts kicked. And I remember I had had enough. And you remember Randy Zingo?
I do.
Right. And Randy's brother, Chris, played for Cornell, All-American,
yep.
you know, linebacker.
Yep.
So somebody gets tackled and Chris is standing around the pile. And I had heard his name all day long.
Yeah.
Zingo, 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 Zingo. And half the time I was like, this dude's not even in on the tackle. They're still calling his name. He's jumping on the pile. So I made a beeline to him and drilled him
yeah.
in the back,
yeah.
which was not good. Flags went flying. And scuffle starts out. And I'm just like, I don't care. I come over to the sideline and I got one coach going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I got another coach looking at me going, dude, thank you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the next day we're watching tape and I'm running wrong routes and they're like, and finally, I think it was Trick was like, hey, look, he's not even running the right routes, but I'll tell you what he is doing. He's going full speed.
Listen.
And, hey, you might not like that he just hit the kid in the back and got a personal foul, but look at the rest of you guys, right? And so from that day on, the toughness of who I was, and then my commitment to understanding the playbook, because now I'm getting real reps, had come in. So it was important to me when you guys came in that you guys understood the game, understood the plays, et cetera. So, you know, that was my early experiences, you know, with Fordham. And those are the moments that stick out is when, you know, they're giving me junk. They're giving me a hassle. I just said, I'm going to prove that this is not, you know, I'm not going to listen to this. I'm not going to take this. I'm going to prove these guys wrong. Yeah.
And I want to thank you for that attitude, because you definitely gave it to me, right? A couple things I want to point out. I've heard that same saying, James, if you don't know what you're doing, do it 100%, do it 100 miles an hour. And I remember, doing that all the time. And that was from Coach Trick. But just to talk about the guys, right? We did have each other's back. Everything was cool after the coaches left. And I remember always bringing up the rear in our after in our sprints, you know, after practices. And Coach Trick, hurry up, Simmons. And I'm like, listen, don't make everybody run because my legs are short. It ain't frat's fault. And that's what we did from the beginning, and stick up for each other. And the toughness, man. I was looking at some stuff, and it was funny because it was the year you were leaving, and it was an article talking about key losses, right?
Yeah.
And your name was on there, Sozik's name was on there, and a lot of other guys' name was on there. Yeah. And then they talked about key returns.
Yeah.
I was going into my senior year.
Yeah.
My name wasn't on that list.
Sure.
And I looked at that, I'm like, man. And what did I wind up doing? Going out leading the teams in receptions and yards my senior year, and playing the whole game. Knowing that folks didn't think that my body could take the wear and tear.
Sure.
I owe that to you, that mentality of toughness, Scooby, because you guys are always headhunting. Always headhunting. Sure. And blocking wasn't my forte. Look,
you know, and I think we took pride in it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, look, you know I wasn't the fastest guy out there. You know I wasn't the most athletic guy out there. But you knew, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to run the right route.
Right.
He's going to be where he's supposed to be at the right time, even though he's not as fast as everybody else. Mm-hmm. And if for any reason somebody catches a ball and gets free to start running, he's going to knock somebody out.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, there was many out routes by the slot receivers or the tight ends where I turned and laid somebody out.
Exactly.
And I took pride in it. And so did Dave.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of took pride in the fact that, you know, we kind of looked like each other, right?
Yeah.
You know, I still remember one of the coaches came up to Dave and was like, after spring ball, it was like, oh my gosh, I need to slap your hand. You crush so-and-so. And I turned to Dave. I'm like, dude, that wasn't you. That was me. And he's like, oh, I know. But he took the credit from the coach. And it was funny, right? Because I'm like sitting there going, I was mad.
Right.
Like to a degree.
Yeah.
I wanted that credit.
Yeah.
You know, and it because I took pride in it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of the things like that I talk about, you know, here I am a wide receiver playing front line of the kick return.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you remember, I would collapse the whole side.
Yeah.
Just by hitting one guy into four.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. You know, wide receivers nowadays, you know, you don't see as many blockers.
No, not at all.
Right? Catch the ball, flashy, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had to be a throwback.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the speed and I didn't have I had to be the toughest wide receiver on the field.
Yep.
And there was no other wide receiver like that on the team until Dave came in.
Yeah.
You know, Cal was smooth, big, strong, looking like he's just chiseled, right?
Yep.
But he's smooth and could run.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you had, you know, me on the opposite side. You know, look, I'm not gonna get more than 25 touches this year.
Yeah.
But when I do, I'm gonna get as many yards. You know, you could put me under the possession receiver.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna light you up.
Yep.
And I'm gonna make you think about if somebody else catches the ball
next time.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and we played our roles, and I've mentioned that many a times, and that's what helped us be successful and score some points. Helped Joe, you know, get a lot of records in his day while we were doing that thing. So definitely, but I do want to touch, because your high school experience, right? Because we're going to make some connections a little bit later on down the line. Yeah. You know, what was that like, your first experience playing ball, whether it was Pee Wee, high school? Sure. What that look like coming up?
All right. So going back, first time I stepped on a football field, I played for the Northwest Hawks. Mm-hmm. Now, you got to remember, growing up Akron, Ohio, right? You got everything,
yep.
Right? White, black, Asian, doesn't matter.
Yep.
I go to the first day of practice. I'm the only white kid. Only white kid.
Yeah.
They hand me the football and say, you're the quarterback. I'm like, you haven't even seen me throw a ball, let alone, you know. And by the way, back then, you didn't have smaller footballs for our hands. You used the bigger football.
Yep.
Right? And so I just remember, you know, being this tall, blonde hair, white kid and surrounded by kids that don't look like me. And one of the quarterback's name, because you played two levels, right? I think it was like first and second grade played together, something like that. The quarterback the year before, his name was Chico. Chico's still on the team. Chico's got an afro, you know, out, you know, pretty big at the time, right? And I just remember going, this is going to get interesting. And we're running the option with a slow white kid with blonde hair and a bunch of guys that don't look like me and are way faster.
Yeah.
But you know, it's, you know, kind of that transcending of football. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I could remember the plays. Mm-hmm. I could get people where they needed to go and I could take the snap and quite frankly, hand the ball off. Right. So, that was my first experience with it. And to this day, the best man in my wedding, Karen Pooler, was my tailback. And so, here you are, a little, you know, white kid from Akron, Ohio, playing on an all-black team. And it's not like I didn't have other choices, right, to go play on other teams that looked more like me. But it was cool.
Yeah.
And we were good. And we had these shiny, shiny yellow helmets. You know, it was hilarious. And my head was so darn big, and you know this, that I actually had to go get a varsity helmet because my head was so big. So, like, that was my first experience with it. So culture, you know, again, culture shock, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then as it went through, you know, it gets, then you know, I still remember, and I just passed it the other day because we were in Ohio for Thanksgiving. And every time I pass this field, I still remember the same thing, is the last game I played, or the last game my grandfather saw was one where, I mean, I tore it up. I was running, you know, 70-yard touchdowns, you know, just playing unbelievably. And he had Alzheimer's. So, you know, he was, you know, that was the last time he could see me play.
Right.
So that moment just passed, literally just passed the field on Friday. Memory pops out. Right. And he's been gone for quite some time. He passed when I was 12 years old. So at that point I was 8. Right. So, you know, those are that memory of on that field at that school, this happened, right? Grandfather saw the last game.
Yeah.
Then carried into my high school. You know, I went to a high school that my grandfather was the team trainer.
Gotcha.
Which back then meant here's a Band-Aid and an aspirin, tape it on, right? Exactly. Get back out there.
Yeah.
And my grandfather was all of 4'11".
Yeah.
Right? And my father played there. And, you know, he wasn't any good. And I remind him of that. you know, so family had gone to that school. Now, the funny thing is it's St. Vincent, St. Mary's. That's where everybody knows LeBron James.
Yep,
right.
Yep.
So, and of course, I'm much older than him. But, you know, you get there and now you have four, you know, years or grades of kids that you're playing with. Right. So you do your freshman ball and then finally you get an opportunity when you're a sophomore. And then I stepped on the field as a junior as a tight end and we were good. I mean, we had guys, you know, that could play the game. I just remember, you know, you remember those specific games. We played Massillon, Ohio. We were number one in our area. They're number one in their area. And as we're driving on our team bus to the stadium, every house down the street said, beat St. V, beat St. V, beat St. V. That's in their windows. We get to the stadium. The stadium actually seats 17,000. Packed. Turf. I mean, we're talking 1991, right? Turf, sound system. They're chanting Tigers, like spelling it out, and it sounds like you're at Ohio State. Standing room only, 20,000 in the building. We beat them 28-25. Everybody runs the field. But here's the funny thing that I remember about this. So I was wearing Sharks. You remember the old molded cleats, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At first play, I'm slipping. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing tight end. I keep slipping. I come off to the sideline, and I'm looking around, like at kids' shoes.
Yeah.
And I look at this sophomore. I'm like, what size are you? He goes, I'm a 12 and a half. I'm like, are those 12s and a half? He goes, yeah. I was like, give them. He's like, what? James, these were Jordans. Right? He had on Jordan basketball shoes.
Wow.
Because he knew he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
I'm like, give me your shoes. I played that game in his, like just a sophomore,
yeah, yeah.
In his Jordan basketball shoes.
My goodness.
Balled out.
That sounds just like you, you bully. That sounds yeah, like you.
Exactly. But it was one of those things, you know, yeah. You sit there and you're yeah. just like, yeah. you know, and so that was a moment. And so there's always those little moments. And the other moment was, I still remember everybody always remembers their last game, right?
Yeah.
And I still remember coming out afterwards mm-hmm. and hugging my dad and bawling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you knew it was over.
Yeah.
And while most kids, you know, and I didn't know, I thought I was going to play baseball in yeah. college, but most kids, that's it.
Yeah.
They're done. Mm-hmm. So from that side of it, I didn't know. You know, it's not like today where you kind of know before your senior year. I had no idea. I didn't even know Fordham existed, right? And so, you know, that's kind of that high school journey that was just, you know, spectacular, right? And it's funny because it's spectacular and then sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because you think it's over.
Yeah.
And for 99% of it is.
It is. And we were fortunate. And, you know, it's yeah. funny. I did not know your high school story. I guess we were so into needing to learn the playbook yeah. and things like that. I know more offensive linemen's high school yeah. stories than I do yeah. yours, but great stuff. And, you know, we were fortunate to play on and not only play, but you've had the opportunity also to coach, you know,
yeah.
on that level. And
sure.
you know, as a player, a coach, and we're going to talk in a second about dad, you know, what are some of the things from the coach's perspective, you know, that stick with you? From those days that you coached?
Are you from me coaching?
From you coaching high, yeah. College football, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. You get into the college, and I was fortunate enough to coach at, you know, two places, right? King's College and then Columbia University. And it's amazing how different it is from the other side, right? We always were like, oh, it's a practice thing. It's, you know, we didn't spend a ton of time watching film or, you know, we watched film, but we didn't spend a ton of time. And just what I remember from, you know, the college coaching, more so at Columbia than King's College, was, you know, we're watching film till 11 o'clock at night,
yep.
breaking stuff down. And then coming in the next morning at 7 a.m. and starting it all over again.
Yeah.
And then we see the kids at 3 o'clock. Right. So all we're doing in reality, all we're doing is football. And then when those kids come in, you know, they've just had a full day of class and life. Right. And I just remember how hard it was at times to get the focus of these kids. And, you know, and the funny thing is you're at Columbia, right? You got a bunch of wizards, you know, they're all smart. And sometimes you tell them to do something. And they would question it because it didn't make sense to them. And that, you know, you kind of look at them and you'd have to say, listen, I know you're extremely smart, but you're a dumb football player. So point A to point B, it's all I want. Step with your right foot. Don't overthink this thing. Right. And getting that focus, you know, was something that wasn't always easy. And so for the first parts of practice, you actually would realize that they were set up in a way to gain focus. And as a player, we yeah. never knew that. We were nope. just like, let's go. Right.
Exactly.
And, you know, we kind of stand off to the side and joke about whatever and who's talking to who and, you know, just working on our craft. But from a football standpoint, that's what I realized is it's, and it's so, you actually start to realize the impact that the coaches had on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't really, it's always one of those things when we're playing, we're not realizing the impact that they're potentially having on us, both negative or positive, right?
Right.
We don't feel it, right? We're just like, okay, the coach was nice to me. He was mean to me, whatever. He's playing me. He's not playing me. Mm-hmm. But then you step into the coach's role and you put the whistle on and you right. realize if you're paying attention as a coach, mm-hmm. you can have a profound impact on this person,
right.
not only on the field, but of course afterwards.
Definitely.
And I think that's where I started to realize, and you got to remember, I'm coaching with Dave. So I'm coaching with a guy who last coached me, right?
Right.
And I'm starting to realize, and I never stopped calling him coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
even then I'm still, he goes, you can call me Dave. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
To this day I will, cause I'm, you know, almost 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I still wouldn't do it. I called him coach and, but then I realized the impact that he actually had on me. And so then you start to think about how can I impact these kids? And so my role as a graduate assistant was, you know, we kind of laughed earlier where we said, hey, coaches would yell at us. And then we'd all group together and be like, we got this. So as a graduate assistant, I kind of decided I'm going to take that middle role.
Right, right.
So I'm going to let them yell. Yeah. I'm never going to yell at these guys. Yeah. And then I'm going to pull them aside or when I get a chance to talk to them and have a conversation about, you know, forget the noise of what he was saying or the volume at what he was saying. Here's what you need to take from it.
Right.
So I chose to go that route. Right. And you also got to remember is 80s to 90s, you had a style of coaching that was okay.
Yep.
As you got into the late 90s and you went into the 2000s, things were changing.
Different ballgame.
Right. Yep. And so while you used to have the Bobby Knights of the world, you couldn't do that anymore.
Nope. Nope.
Right.
Nope.
And so I kind of just took that middle ground of I wasn't much older than these kids. I just finished. So I can relate closer to them than a 30-year-old can. And so that's kind of what out of all of it, you know, I loved the interaction with these kids. And they were again from all over the place, but more so of, you know, these were gonna like Columbia University, these are gonna be the leaders of the world, right? I mean, they're all graduating with great jobs.
Yeah.
And so it was just one of those things where I just wanted to make it as easy for them emotionally as I possibly could, you know, because football is a grind physically and it can be emotionally.
Definitely. Definitely. So, you know, it's funny because, you know, after I left Fordham, I went to Iona, Coach Mariani. Yeah. So very similar situation. I still call coach. You know, he's like, call me Fred. I'm like, no, that's not happening. But that relationship with the guys, you know, that I was responsible for at my position of wide receiver, it was like I was a big brother, you know, because I could literally go out there and show them because I just did it 4 months ago, you know, so that was a different relationship. and to talk about Coach Pat Node, he was more of an emotional kind of guy. You know, if he didn't get our attention, he'd walk away, you know, and that's him showing his disappointment. Mm-hmm. And I remember carrying some of those traits with me to Iona. And even now, as I've coached football at the high school level and basketball, doing similar things like that. So definitely a great impact that coaches have on us. And then we in return had, you know, on our players that we coach. So good stuff. Are you still in your coach mode these days, you know, as we transition to your daughter, your son?
Yeah.
How does that work, man?
Yeah. So I actually, from an actual coaching standpoint, so I did coach my son in youth football. And, you know, the funny thing about it, James, is we were in Indiana. And so my son was 1 year old.
Right.
I don't know what he's going to be able to do. I don't know what he's going to grow into. And we went to one of my friend's kids' game. And we're talking second, third grade, right? Whatever it might be. And I'm standing there and I'm holding Austin and, you know, we're just watching the game.
Yeah.
And I had always told my wife, the last thing I'm doing is coaching my kid.
Gotcha.
For a number of reasons, right? I don't want to be hard on them. I don't want that relationship to sour because of, you know, what I might do as a coach or say as a coach or whatever. And we're standing there and at halftime, this coach comes over and they're talking to the kids. And all of a sudden I see this coach start showing and demonstrating a chop block.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my face turns red. And I'm just listening and I'm holding Austin and Lindsay's watching my face turn red. And she's like, what's going on? And I said, you know, nothing. And then he kept going. Then I saw him show, you go down low, you push him over the top. I was like, can you hold Austin a second? And I don't know any of these people except for the one parents and the kid. I walk over to the coach. I said, coach, can I talk to you a second? And he goes, yeah, he walks over. And I said things I shouldn't repeat. But it was basically the gist of it was, if I see one of these kids do a chop block, or I hear of you teaching a chop block, or I see you teaching a chop block, yeah, you and I are going to have a problem and it's going to get physical real quick. And he just looked at me and, you know, and I'm somewhat of an imposing person, right? Yeah. And I just said, and I'm dead serious. I said, they will take me in handcuffs when I'm done with you.
Wow.
You know, and it was just, and so I walked back over and now my wife had just witnessed this. Yeah. Now my wife's 5'2" and a half. Mm-hmm. She'll tell you 5'3". Mm-hmm. So she's a little thing. And she looks at me and she goes, that, my friend, is exactly why you're going to coach your son. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so that when it became time and he decided that he wanted to play, he, you know, him and I had a conversation and, you know, look, he was only in first grade. Yeah. I said, here's the deal. I will coach you as long as you want me to coach.
Yeah.
As soon as you don't want me to coach for whatever reason, all you need to do, Austin, is tell me. Right. And so, you know, I started coaching and, you know, he came into his own, started coming into his own a little bit. I coached him all the way through eighth grade. And, you know, and I'd ask him every year, you know, hey, you're not going to hurt my feelings. I have no problem going up into the stands, you know? And he's like, no, I want you to coach. And so what I made sure of, and, you know, over the course of those years, we were a very successful team. Right. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just because of me. We had some good players and we had some good coaches,
right,
but we did it differently. You know, we watched film with the kids and it wasn't to, you know, make us better, but it was, how hard is it to explain to a kid what they're doing wrong when they just forgot about it because the play was over?
Yeah. And can I say, when you say you did it differently, I want to also, just for the audience, you know, a chop block is something that's very dangerous.
Yep.
And most is probably outlawed in the game now, it's on those levels.
So
for you as a parent to step up and speak to the coach about that, that's something that you're doing to protect your kid, but also other kids. So that's the changing of the game. And we see a lot different now, but go ahead. Sorry to take that.
Yeah, and it goes back to like what you said, protecting the integrity.
Yeah.
Right. And what I found, you know, we all find in life, right? It's at that moment, you don't feel like you're see something, say something,
right?
You don't feel it, but it was something that there's certain things that I've seen that I haven't said anything about because it's maybe outside of my world. It's not football related, but it's something that would, you know, I know, you know, that I was like, I'm saying something.
Yeah.
I don't care. That's wrong. Right. And it's the protection of everybody. And so, you know, so to that different part of it, you know, that I wanted to teach the game to these kids with the other coaches so that they could understand it from many different levels. So that it wasn't as much about, I want them to be good so that we win trophies and then they have a good high school career. It was, when you choose to coach your children later in life, that you'll look back and you'll say, those coaches that we had when we were in youth gave us such a positive experience. That's how I want to coach.
Right.
And so, you know, that was kind of, there was no cursing allowed by the coaches. Mm-hmm. And I told them, I go, guys, don't even think, I want to hear a bad word come out of your mouth.
Yep.
Right. I don't care. I don't want to hear a bad mouth come out of these kids' mouths. If a kid gets a penalty and it's, you know, a holding's different. If they get a personal foul or something like that, get them off the field. Talk to them, put them right back on. Do not yell at them. Right. And we carried that all the way through. And, you know, we were able to do things because these kids all bought in, you know, and, you know, we ended up, I think over the course of their careers, these kids lost 3 games. But the best thing about it is I still have kids today. And so some of those kids don't play in high school, right?
Right.
I still have some of those kids today. Their parents will say, now they might have played freshman year or sophomore year, and then they decided I'm done. And part of the reason, unfortunately, was I had much more fun playing for the youth or playing Coach Futura or playing for Coach Gallagher or Coach Ryan or whoever else it might be.
Yeah.
And it's just not fun like it was then.
Right, right.
Right. Right. And so, but again, coming back to what's the purpose of them playing? It's one, to teach them competition, one, adversity, you know, and to understand that it takes all 11 of you for a play to be successful. So you're not in it alone, and that's life. But more important to me than anything there was when they grow to become adults and they to potentially coach their children, or they're in the stands and they're watching somebody coach their kids, that they understand that it can be done in a positive way at all times, so that they either, they're going to be the positive coach, or they're going to hold the coach accountable to be positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where it is. And so, yeah, I hung up the, whistle after his eighth grade year.
Yeah.
I've never coached my daughter. I've asked her if she wanted me to, and she's like, no. and you know, she plays soccer and she's very good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where parenting, you know, at the end of the day is coaching without a playbook,
right,
by the way.
Right.
You know, I'll tell a funny story. So Austin probably was second grade, maybe third. And as all kids, having a meltdown, right? Whatever was going on. And he didn't like something, and he was always really able to communicate well. And so he's, you know, talking back, not, you know, having a discussion, not yelling or saying anything I shouldn't say, but we're having a discussion. And I finally sit down and I said, let me talk to you. And because I was always honest with him, even as a little kid, I was like, talk, ask questions. It was never because I said so or any of that kind of stuff. It's let's discuss. And so that's why he's so talkative now. Well, the funniest part about it is my wife's in the other room and she can hear. And I said to him, I go, Austin, listen, when you were born, I said, our lives changed, but I'm going to tell you one thing they didn't do. And he goes, what? I go, they didn't give us an instruction manual. And he looks at me, right? And I'm like, they didn't tell us what to do. So some of these things that are occurring are in your life are occurring for the first time for me too.
Right.
Right. I said, so doing the best I can. You know, I said, but we're learning as we go as well.
Right.
And he appreciated that, right? Yeah, just pure honesty of it.
Definitely.
As I walk out of the room, my wife looks at me. She goes, did you just tell him we don't know what we're doing? And you know how wives hear what they want to hear, right? And I said, no, I didn't say that. She goes, you literally told him, like, they didn't tell us what to do, so we're making it up. And I looked at her and I said, are we not making it up? And she started, you know, she kind of smirked, kind of half smirked.
Yeah.
But it was one of those, and she's such a, I mean, you talk about, we all love our wives and we all think our wives are the best wives in the world and best parents in the world. And she's up there with the best of the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just one of those things where I'm like, listen, we're not going to lie about it. Like, we're going to make mistakes as parents. And that's the honesty of, hey, you know what, bud? If I make a mistake, I own it, and I'll own it to you as a kid. And that was kind of, you know, the coaching, parenting is coaching without a playbook.
Right.
And while we might've been brought up a certain way, and we might've had certain occurrence or certain things happen to us, and they were handled a certain way by our parents. Okay. The world's completely different.
Definitely.
You know, 20 years later. Right.
Yep.
And let alone 2 years ago, let alone post COVID. Right. And so this, the way in which this world changes so quickly, like, we need to kind of keep up with it. But at the same time, as we're going through it,
right,
the changes as they are. And so my thing is always just, hey, I'm gonna be honest. And if I don't know, let's talk about what the options are.
Right. And I feel you on that. You know, my kids are a lot younger, you know, 9 and 7. But from day one, it's always been honest, right? And we do parenting with principles. I'm always going to do it with honesty. I'm always going to love you, and I'm always going to be supporting you. So whatever is in between or in the middle of that, we can figure that out together. But we're going to do those three things always for you.
Yeah.
So appreciate that. And you mentioned it, you know, it's like, as the game has changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coaching styles, because I won a lot of football games in Pee Wee, right?
Yeah.
But that coaching style, it doesn't work today.
No.
You know, it got wins, but it had an impact and a negative impact on some young kids because of the way it was done. So I appreciate, you know, that transformation and how we approach the game,
sure,
teaching our young people, because that has an impact on them moving forward. So good stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, there's two funny moments from, we're not funny. One's funny, one's not. So you can look back on the youth, right? We won championships, et cetera. I still remember to this day, Tristan Jarvis, he's a friend of my son's, he's a lineman, right? Big, at that point, baby fat, you know, face smushed into the helmet. And I'm getting them ready for a scrimmage, their first scrimmage. And as I'm talking to him in a huddle, he goes, "Ooh, look, a rainbow." Here I am doing my best coach speech to get him hyped up, right? Yeah. And my man turns around and says, "Oh, look, a rainbow."
Yeah.
To which I then step back and I'm like, "You don't need to hype these kids up." And I look at him, I go, "Tristan, I love you. Yeah. I will remember that moment forever."
Yeah.
Right. And then the other, and I remind him to this day about it. And then the other one was before a championship game, all of a sudden one of them says, "Hey, you guys want to pray?"
Yeah.
And me being a Christian, I'm like, "Cool. Didn't come from one of us." Right. And what was awesome about it was every one of those kids took a knee and prayed. They had never done that before. What's funnier about it is some of the coaches were like, "Only if you want to, only if you want to." Like it's that kind of, you know, peer pressure or, "Hey, we don't know if you're all Christians or whatever you might be." Right. But it was almost like we were back in public school. "No, you can't do that." Or right. But they all did. None of the coaches got involved. We let them do their thing. And so that's seventh grade year where you all of a sudden you're like, "You know what? We did it. We just did it." Like, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about, one, a kid not being afraid to ask if other guys want to pray. And two, all of them deciding as a team to do it, regardless of what they believed in, and respecting that. So you know, those are the things where what make you the most proud, right, is understanding that you're raising, you know, children to be the next leaders and to release them into a crazy world that hopefully they make better because we all screwed it up. And also knowing that you have two kids and they're completely different, right? And you have to parent them
as the individuals almost, they are.
Yeah. Almost as if they're, you know, they're their own, you know, continent.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
And never compare the two because that'll never work.
Right. Right.
Even though they'll do it to themselves.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's them, siblings, you know what I mean? But as parents and you know, that's a golden nugget.
Yeah.
Individuals, you know, again, and this is my philosophy. The principles are the same.
Yeah.
Honesty, loving, and we're in it together. Yeah. But the way you distribute that looks a little different because everybody's a little bit different. So good stuff. You know, I want to play something for you because I found this and it reminds me.
Oh, boy.
It reminds me of you.
Oh, boy.
And you shared a little bit, but this is so funny. So can you see my screen?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Audience, you might get a kick out of this, but this is Kevin Fritora in a nutshell in about 59 seconds. Our Fordham fight song. Here we go.
Men of Fordham, hail on to the fray. Once more our foes assail in strong array. Once more the old maroon wave on high. We sing our battle song. We do or die. With a ram, a ram, a ram, a victory. A ram.
The best part is I can't wait to see which one of those guys singing you thought I was.
You're the dude doing the beatbox, for sure.
I knew it.
You know, I came across that, and that's just the love, man. That's what our time together really reminds me of. You embracing something different, and us being able to come together. You always show me love, bro. And I appreciate you for that. And I love you for that. And I wanted to share that. And you knew, I knew that was you doing a beatbox.
Oh, I knew. I was trying to figure out what kind of shoes my man had on. I couldn't tell his sneakers. He had an X on it.
So, man, you know, it's been a pleasure. You know, I always give, you know, the guests an opportunity, you know, to leave the audience with something. You gave us so much, you know, on so many different levels, but want to give you that opportunity. What you got for us, man?
Sure. You know, look, we all, you know, are traveling through this journey, right? And it's crazy, and the path goes in many different directions. And, you know, if we're not anchored in something, we're anchored in nothing, right? And for me, fortunately, you know, that anchor for me is in my faith, right? And it all starts there. And without that, you know, I don't know where I would be, where my family would be, and you know, let alone any legacy that I'm trying to leave, right? A lot of people get caught up in the legacy of providing, and we were taught as kids to provide means to provide a house, you know, food and security. That's kind of the male teaching of it. So, you know, coming to a dad's thing, right? What's our true job? Well, yeah, providing is a lot more than that. And what's the legacy? The legacy isn't about how much money you leave to your kids. It's not about what kind of car you drive or anything like that. The legacy is the moments in which you touch, you know, your child's inner soul so that they can then take that forward, right?
Yeah.
They're never going to remember the gift that they got on their 16th birthday. They're going to remember the time that you spent with them on the 16th birthday. So make it more about the moments and less about the mementos, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way to say it. And unfortunately, we all don't realize it till our window starts getting smaller and that time that they're closer to being out of the home. So if anyone's listening to this that has younger kids, you hear it all the time. Don't blink, because if you do, they're going to be in college.
Yeah.
So enjoy the moments and make more of the moments and the time so that they're memorable moments, instead of, you can't replace a, you know, a 5-minute conversation with your kid where you get deep with a, you know, a new iPhone.
Right.
Put the phone down, connect with your kid, and that's what those, they're going to remember. What do you want them to talk about you when they talk to your kids?
Yeah.
Grandpa was a phenomenal father.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's, make it about the moments, not about the mementos. I think that's probably the best way to say it. So I'll trademark that after we're done.
Well, if you wasn't, I was going to ask if I can borrow it. I love it. Moments and not mementos. That's beautiful. And that's the message that we try to spread here at A Dad's Thing is, you know, love your kids more than anything else. You only got one goal about it. So I really appreciate you joining me on the show, Kevin. It's been great having this conversation. And thanks a lot.
Thanks for doing this for all of us.
Thank you.
You know, thanks for having me. But thanks for doing this and putting this platform out, brother.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Got it. Yep.
Thank you for joining this episode of Fatherhood and Football, A Dad's Thing production, where finding and embracing our roles in fatherhood is a journey, and one that we do not have to do alone. Please join us next Thursday for our next episode, and follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at A Dad's Thing for all your fatherhood-related content. You can also find our podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Breaker, and Radio Public.